And away we go. Good morning. For me, it's morning. Today is a study day at the Kwon. And Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. What I want to discuss today is the proper practice of Nichiren Buddhism and Quantum Life Buddhism as we practice it in our Sangha. I want to talk about how to do Gangyo. Several people have asked me to do some Daimoku and a slow Gangyo to help them learn. Many of you are learning on your own independently, and I laud you for that. There's a lot of problems with organizations. They tend to put the organization first and the members second, and I'm a strong proponent against that. I've often said that I will have the only institution that will recommend that its members don't come. Please believe me, I invite you all to come and visit anytime. Call me, email me, put questions under my videos, contact me electronically any way you can. My life's purpose is to help you in answering the questions you will have about your practice, how to practice correctly, what things mean, how to through the plethora of teachings and commentaries, come to the correct meaning behind the words, all of that. So please use me. You'll only help me in the process as I help you. And that is the amazing, truly amazing gift of this practice. So first of all, I'm going to put my beads down. I have a video about the beads, as well as documents that I've put up on my website with photographs and so forth that you can check out. My website being threefoldlotus.com, all one word, threefoldlotus.com. I want to speak for a moment before I dive into, and I am going to do a video after this, where I will chant for a little bit, nice and easy rhythm, so that those of you who are learning the Daimoku will hear it as clearly as I can say it, and do it with me. And I will also do what's called a slow Gangyo. Now, I'm not going to, when you're first learning Gangyo, and if for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about this stuff, okay, the recitation of the second and the sixth, and part of the second and the 16th chapter of the Lotus Sutra. What I want to do today, let me see if I can get that in focus. There you go. You can see the words, the pronunciation, and the Chinese and the Sanskrit characters above parts of the words. I want to explain to you what all that means today. Why we do it. How we do it is very important, but most people want to know, what is this Namu Myoho Renge Kyo thing? What does that mean? I feel weird saying something I don't understand. And why do I need to learn to recite this entire book? And what good does that do? And why do I do it? And why is that the correct practice? And you know, this is where I, the Threefold Lotus Kwon, Quantum Life Buddhism, kind of differs from a lot of the Nichiren sects out there. And I believe this is, it's a very significant thing, but it's easy to overlook. I think a great deal of Nichiren Buddhism sects or cults, because there are many lay organizations that are really, they're just cults. I laud anyone, please understand, who's out there spreading the methodology of Buddhism. It's wonderful. But, and so this is where we differ, okay? There are some who will say that no matter what you're understanding, you don't have to understand anything. You don't have, you could be barely literate and just chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo over and over again, and you will get benefit. And I'm not going to argue with that. But I want to speak to who I believe is a much larger population. I don't think I'm that different from any one of you in that I don't mind doing something based on just curiosity and seeing if it works. I don't have a problem with that. But at some point, if we're anything alike, especially if you notice that it works, how is it working? Why does it work? Well, I need to know these things. I'm a human being. I'm attached to the earth. I'm attached to this body. I'm attached to reason. And the Buddha said, you know, don't do anything if it doesn't agree with your reason, your own reason. So I really respect those words of Buddha. I also respect the words of Buddha when he said that in order to practice correctly, even if all you do is the meditation, oops, battery's running low, apologize while I plug this in. Even if all you do is the meditation, that it's critical that your meditation is done with a specific determination, a conviction that you're going to discover your Buddhahood. You're going to be at one with Buddha. If you don't have that conviction, then you might as well just be mumbling broomstick to yourself all day. Okay? Now, I just kind of skimmed over something and I want to address it right now because I'm sure some of you were thinking it. Why chant at all? Why is there so much information out there in the world? Nichiren Buddhist, Theravada Buddhist, Tendai Buddha, whatever Buddhism, even non-Buddhism, Hinduism, and yoga, and other things that all have a take on meditation. What is this thing called meditation? And you have Zen, and they have all these people talking about the void, emptiness, and empty your mind. And oh my gosh, you can read endlessly online or books on how to empty your mind and the several tricks. And I've talked about it too. But here's the thing. Our minds, our human mind, is incredibly, unbelievably active, constantly going to town with thoughts. We're barely conscious of a small percentage of the thoughts that are running through our head, okay? So to be able to find quietude and focus the mind on what? What do you focus the mind on if you're trying to get it to not focus on anything? And Buddha talked about this. Buddha talked about, even in Buddhism, his early teachings, just to get people to start to understand, talking about breath counting and those kind of things. He was just trying to get people to realize that we are not of only one mind. That we have a mind to control our mind. We have a Buddha nature, a Buddha wisdom, an innate energy from which we it manifested that we can use to quell, quiet, and cease the what he called the monkey mind, the monkeys of our human mind that are constantly jumping limb to limb and changing decisions, blah, 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 running all over the place. And he said, you could reach enlightenment by quieting those monkeys, but that the success ratio would be pretty small. Maybe one in a million would attain complete enlightenment through that methodology. And what Buddha's statement at the beginning was, no matter what story you read, he was trying to find a method by which Everybody, very democratic. Any, not just the Brahmin class, not just the priesthoods, not just the specially educated, not just the very literate, but everyone from the lowest caste of society to the highest, no matter what your life condition, there's a method, if it's true, that will work for all sentient beings to achieve complete enlightenment, complete awakening, complete Buddha nature, and our Buddha wisdom manifest in this life. Now, he didn't really say that until he got to the latter years of his teachings. And that's why we have different schools of Buddhism. You have like the Theravada and Vajrayana and the Mahayana. Those are the big terms. There are smaller terms that individuate all these different sects and things. And Hinayana is actually kind of a derisive term, so I use it because historically it's used a lot, but just understand that it basically is a little bit of the thumbing of the nose people who are stuck in the first early years of Buddha's teachings, of Shakyamuni's teachings, and they refuse to adopt any of the Mahayana principles, which delve deeper into insight and personal mission and the achievement of all beings, including women, as able to manifest their Buddha nature in this life. For the Hinayana Buddhists, the entire goal of practice is to become an arhat. In other words, to become so deep in understanding that they actually are no longer influenced by earthly matters. That certainly can sound like enlightenment, and it is a stage of enlightenment, but it's a very selfish and individual stage. And the Buddha, again, was not his declared mission. So Mahayana Buddhists, it says you can go several stages beyond that. So you hear the Mahayana Buddhists in different sects, not just Nichiren, talking about the Bodhisattva path. Well, that's a Mahayana concept because it puts forth that in order to really achieve an escape from samsara, an escape from samsara being the condition that allows for all of this manifestation, this humanity and everything else, and therefore suffering, to achieve that level without ever regressing, without ever leaving any kind of material in the energy, the multiverse of energy, that would re-manifest, not reincarnate. That's Hinduism. That's about a personages coming back. That's not Buddhism at all. But that we leave vestiges of what builds us and creates us extant. That's not true liberation. So the path to true liberation is to help others come along and achieve true liberation. That's the Bodhisattva path. So I have a lot of other videos about that. I don't want to get any further in it, but basically the point I want to make, and I think you can tell by now, is that if you're going to have strong conviction toward enlightenment, toward finding your own Buddhahood, you're going to have a lot of questions at some point. You're going to say, how, where, how, why does this work? How does this work? When did this ever work? So on and so forth. So the Buddha understood this. Shakyamuni understood this. So he came up with three principles. He said, yeah, without conviction, you might as well be chanting hamburger sandwich or whatever. You're really not going anywhere. You must have conviction when you chant, when you meditate, okay? But in order to have conviction, how can you have conviction? Study. And so throughout all of Shakyamuni's teaching life, He reinforced constantly, study, study, study. Now, doesn't that make sense? Have you ever learned how to dance? Have you ever learned how to make a sandwich or tie your shoe or performed a martial art or performed in any other way? You can't just jump on stage and start dancing. Well, you could, I suppose, but I don't know how much acclaim you would reach. You certainly would learn something, but what would be the quality of what you know? And what would be the shared quality, more importantly, of others seeing what you think you know? Bodhisattva. So, study. Buddha said study broadly. Not just all of the Buddha's teachings, not all the Buddha's teachings and the commentaries on the Buddha's teachings, told to be in the numbers you hear from 84,000 to 180,000 commentaries, it just goes on and on. But also the non-Buddhist teachings. Because in Shakyamuni's mind, all knowledge eventually leads you to the same realization. But if all you do is study pieces of it, you will be misled. You will be misguided by the fallacy of human behavior, of ego. Ego always gets in the way. All right? So this is the main focus of quantum life Buddhism, is study. Because from study comes all the aha moments of, oh, I get that. And the more you get those moments, the more you're motivated to do it. So even if you don't go into it thinking this way, just studying and getting excited about what you study, when you sit down and you chant or meditate, whatever you want to call it, you are motivated. And so there it is. That's the proper formula. Now, why chant? Why recite? Here's why. There are a lot of philosophies and a lot of religions that are all based on death. They're all based on, if you do all this stuff right, you'll get out of this misery and you'll go to a happy place or not. Buddhism is not death-based. Buddhism is enlightenment-based. And by being awakened and enlightened, one understands that death is no different than birth, and that both of them are not a beginning or an end, but just part of a greater eternal process. This window that we have in this lifetime is a window in a state of perceptive reality where we can witness the grandeur of the whole. That's all this is. It's a little blip for us. It's kind of like having a lucid dream while you're sleeping. The sleep is forever, but you have little lucid dreams and you get little aha moments and you understand and you go back into sleep. That's all a lifetime is. It's a moment. And in this moment of life, we can realize the enormity of the life process. And that enormity fills us with such wonder and appreciation that any of the negatives that are going on in the world that really are just mind activity just get pushed away. They just go away. And all we see is blissful wonder. And that's all we see in other people and ourselves. And that's what makes us all one. Isn't this just super bitchin'? I had to throw in a little 70s there. But that's what we're talking about. Life is about being happy. Happy, not ha-ha-ha happy, but happy, wow, happy. Isn't this amazing? This is spectacular. And it is. If we could just get all that other crud out of our heads, that's all we would see is how spectacular it is. Like watching a child being born, or a fawn being born, or just the morning dew waking up in a forest. And there's just so much that's amazing. And yet it's all clouded by all this negativity and other stuff that for some reason we're attached to. Buddhism is about learning how to let all that go. So how do we do it? So a lot of people meditate about letting it go. But it's hard because you're using your earthly mind to cleanse your earthly mind. It's really tough. So what's the answer? As Buddha was indicating, you have to be really focused on integrating, meeting, opening your Buddha wisdom, being at one with Buddha-ness. So what is that? How do I do that? This is where mantras come in. And the mantra of Nichiren Buddhism is something that was developed over some 700 years or more. Actually, it was Buddha's teaching from over 2,500 years ago, almost 3,000. But they really started to nail it down around 600 AD with Tendai or Chi Che or Chi Yi, as he's known. He ends up getting called Tendai because that the mountain in China that he establishes monasteries on for teaching his insights and his disciples was Mount Tendai or Tendai, as depending on which pronunciation you use from China, Japan, Korea, whatever. So Nichiren finally boiled it down to what it already had been boiled down, but not practiced in the same way. Was Nichiren talked about, well, Tendai talked about the five periods of Buddha's teaching, Shakyamuni's teachings. This is Tendai was an amazing scholar in that he was able to assemble all of the known sutras and commentaries from all over, and he was able to by analyzing them, see that some just popped up out of sect that wanted to add it to it. And like for Zen, for instance, deviates from the lineage of transference of the Buddha's teachings with Dogen. And they really follow a school of Dogen's Buddhism. He elaborated and added his own teachings, and Zen really is kind of an offshoot. And if you're a strict Buddhist, then you would say that that's not really Buddhism, because Buddhism is about Shakyamuni Buddha's teachings. But study is the only thing that will help you resolve these kind of conflicts in your mind. And I don't want to, I don't have enough lifetimes to talk to you about all of them. You have to do it yourself. Buddhism is a very self-initiated and self-motivated practice. Again, this is why I believe study is incredibly crucial to deepening and the effectiveness of your practice over time. Because all of us will do something for a while, but will you do it till the day you die? I don't think you can unless you constantly feed yourself with more information to go, I knew that. I knew it. That had to be that way. Or I knew that that guy was talking baloney, because it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit with what I'm studying. And so this is the only way you're going to know. Even me, don't believe me. Believe the teaching, okay? But our sect is very hardcore about following the meaning of Shakyamuni's teachings and the great scholars that followed him, like Nagarjuna, Vasubandhu, Tendai, Miaolo, Saicho, and Nichiren, finally, is the most current one we have. What Nichiren did was basically built on Tendai and said, this is this five periods of teachings. The title of the Lotus Sutra in Japanese is Myoho Renge Kyo. And guess what? The title of each chapter, each of the 28 chapters in the Myoho Renge Kyo, it starts with Myoho Renge Kyo. And basically describe, much like the Avatamsaka, the first teaching or the Kigan teaching of Shakyamuni, was all about the nature of what he experienced when he was enlightened, when he was awakened. And most people around him heard all of that and went, huh? Because it was so far away from their understanding of life and caste and kingdom and everything. So he had to back off. He only taught that for a couple of weeks and then went, whoop, or 3 weeks, 21 days, I believe. And then he got into, okay, I need to get these guys settled into a way that they're going to understand what I'm teaching. He spent 22 years teaching that way until he shifted to another. So these are periods of teachings, right? Anyway, so you can look at my video on Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. I have a couple of them online on my YouTube channel. And they will illustrate the five periods in the five characters of Myoho Renge Kyo. What you'll normally get when you research that is all of this rhetoric about the lotus flower from a muddy swamp, and this is the mystical, and this is the this, and this is the teaching, and and that's all useful, but it's only useful for a certain period of time before, look, I'm not a lotus flower, but I need to know how this works, at least I do, and I think that I've done a much better, I'm not a great teacher, but I've done a better job of illustrating my breadth of study about the Buddha's teachings to deliver to you something that has, I think, much more merit. That you can see how Myo and Ho and Reng and Ge and Kyo are all not just translatable characters, but that they're special characters made to embody a certain period of Shakyamuni's teachings. And the more you understand that, the more you think, well, now I'm starting to get why this mantra has more meaning. Because it's not just about being, you know, enlightened from a muddy swamp. And that's nice folklore and it's nice fables to listen to. You know, but how? What's the meat of this thing? What's the science of this thing? Why does it work? How does it work? How being much more important than why. Because we occupy our human minds with why all the time, right? So, Nichiren understood this. And this is why Nichiren made a mandala that was like no other mandala. He didn't make painted circles with pictures of the Buddha and Nichiren and this and this. Buddha himself said, do not iconize me. Do not make iconographies of me. Don't pray to me. Don't meditate to me. Don't focus on me. I'm not it. The Buddhahood is in you. Buddha is a life state. It is not a personage. It's not an identity. It's an experience. It's an experience beyond perception, and that's why it's so difficult to talk about. So what you need to do as a human is clear your perception. Remove all the veils and the blockages you have that are keeping you from seeing clearly. And when you see clearly, you will have the hope of experiencing that which is eternal, which is in you, which is in everything, which is what ties us all together, which is what all of this is about. So, why do we chant? Because we invoke with our lungs, our throat, our tongues, our minds, we invoke the five periods of teachings. That's a lot of stuff. That's number one. Number two, we develop a rhythm. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. That's a physical thing that we now are occupying our brains with. And it begins because it controls our breathing and our body motion. It begins a kind of a trance-like sensation to our human bodies and minds. Guess what that's doing? It's eliminating the monkeys. Without even trying, you are making an incredible thing happen by entering a trance-like experience with a verbal commitment and your mind trying to get those words right and keeping the rhythm. We are pushing out all the monkeys and we have very few thoughts penetrating. Oh, they'll penetrate, believe me, they will. But there'll be casual thoughts. They'll be sometimes obsessive, but that's when you know, hey, I'm being taken out of my trance. I need to get back to focusing. Focusing on what? That's what the mandala's for. So you have to be careful what the mandala represents, right? Otherwise, that could just mess you all up. So the mandala that Nichiren created was a mandala that was focused on the middle, was the characters of Namu, our dedication to and our single-minded conviction to, Myoho Renge Kyo. That's right in the middle. That's the biggest thing to focus on. We're supposed to focus on the first character, Myo. And then all of the other characters around it are the main lessons within the Lotus Sutra embodied in the names. And I have another video where I teach that when you read sutras, what you're reading is in the form of a dialogue between the Buddha or his various constituents. And there's a lot of naming conventions going on, and you can get lost in all that. And Buddha, in the Lankavatara Sutra, made it very clear, do not get lost in the words, follow the meaning. So the meaning of all these labels are just labels of the differences of human perceptions. You just put labels on them. Kind of like modern psychology does with schizophrenic or, on and on. So ADHD, whatever. That's what these different bodhisattvas and Buddhas and deities and monsters and all of these things, they're all capsules for you to take in your mind. Oh, this kind of behavior, that's a Devadatta kind of behavior. And this kind of behavior, oh, that's kind of a dragon queen kind of behavior. And this kind of behavior, see, they're just, so let go of the labeling convention and understand the meaning. These are different manifestations of the way human minds perceive. That makes sense? So in the lesson of the Lotus Sutra, he has some very huge categories that he talks about, and they all end up being able to attain Anuttara, Samyak, Sambodhi, complete awakening. Because it doesn't matter what your path is in life. It doesn't matter how different our perceptions are. We all will have our own unique experience of pushing away our own monkeys and our polluted worldviews in order to cleanse our perception until we all are perceiving the same. And the same will be our Buddha wisdom, our Buddhahood. Does that make sense? So this is the purpose of chanting the Daimoku. This is the purpose, a large part of the purpose of the Gangyo, and why we do it with such a focus with Gohonzon. I believe everyone who practices has to have a Gohonzon because you need that perfect mirror. You need that thing, and it doesn't matter what it says on it. What you need is something to occupy your eyes. Your eyes are a big receiver of monkeys. So if your eyes are focused on Myo, and you're chanting Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, and you have a rhythm to it, or if you're chanting Myoho Renge Kyo Hoben Pondai Ni Niji Sesanju Sanmai Anjo Niji Gocha, now your mind is like really working on getting that pronunciation right and those words right and keeping the rhythm and focusing. Believe me, you've achieved what all those other meditative stances may never achieve in their lifetime. Now, I'm sorry to be harsh about it, but it's true. I've met people who've meditated for 30 years, transcendental or Zen or whatever. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of health benefits to breathing exercises. That's why I teach Qigong. There's a lot of benefit to your health in Tai Chi Chuan, in dance, in fine arts, for just the lubrication of your mind and the way you think, to think more abstractly. Health is very important to your ability to chant and dedicate yourself fully to your Buddhist practice. It just makes sense. But none of them, of course, replace correct Buddhist method in order to get you to your awakening, your enlightenment. Okay? So with all that, you'll notice at the beginning of the Gangyo book, you'll see a page like this. It's a pronunciation guide. When I'll give you an example. The letter G says, as in go. That means that when you're reading all the phonetics in this part, every G that you see on the page is pronounced G. There's no soft G. There's no Like people argue over, is it a GIF or a GIF? Well, it's a GIF. No matter where you see that G in here, it's a G. G. Sorry, GIF. I made a mistake of my own. It's always a G. I know what it is when I do Gongo. Where's another one so I can save my embarrassment? Okay, so Y is always like the Y in yes or you, that yeah sound. Never an I, or like the letter I. That's the one that's most difficult for people. The letter I is pronounced like in machine. It's pronounced like an E, like in French. The letter I is E, okay? But you'll see the letter I in here. Where's an example? Right there where it says, come on, finger, where are you? Come on, go on, go on, go on, go on. Oh, there it is. It says E, Holben Rico. Most people will say I, Holben. It's wrong. It's E. No matter where you see an I, it's E sound. Okay? So it's not a very big key. There's only a few. Once you learn those and get them ingrained in your head, again, this is going to occupy your mind, throughout the book, it will sound the same everywhere, within a word or alone. Now, there's a couple of other extensions, and you can see there are very few. One, two, three, four exceptions. Okay? One thing that I think helps everyone is when you see, like the first one, it says Shari Hotsu, and it says two beats. What I want to explain to you is that each of these characters is a beat. So when you, where you would want to say two syllables, shari, and then hotsu, right, to the beat, what you actually say is shari hotsu. See, there's only one beat above the word hotsu. So it would be pronounced shari hotsu, and so on. So if you're confused about the beat, just look at the characters above the words, okay? So that first line says, Ji ga toku burai. You see how toku, instead of being toku, became one beat? So it's Ji ga toku burai shogyo shokoshu muyo heku sen man. See, heku became one beat. Okusai asogi jose pokyo ke. Mushu, akushu, jo, aku became one beat. So, that's it. If you can get that down, then it's just a matter of pronunciation. And I'm going to do a slow gongo. It's not going to be super slow, but slow enough where you should be able to catch on. Believe me, when you first start, you may be sitting with a friend or by yourself going, ni, a, endai, or endai, and going back, endai, fu, no show o. But as soon as you can, what will be extremely helpful, especially if you have a friend to do this with, is to adopt a rhythm. That will fix so much of your pronunciation, you can't believe it. But I know it's helpful to hear somebody just do it. So, you know, when I do these things, I do them at a pretty healthy pace, because you want to have the vigor of your life. And if you're going to do it every morning and every evening, you don't want to be spending 5 hours doing it, right? I'm not saying it's going to take that long, but you know what I'm saying. So, you know, at a regular speed, I would go, Niji butsugo chobo tatsugyu isai daishu shosen nanchi nyo to to shingo nyo rai jo daishi go bugo daishu nyo to to shinge nyo rai jo daishi go. I know it that way. But when you're learning, it's helpful to just establish a rhythm. And ni ji butsu go shobo satsugyu isai daishu. Make a beat for each one of those marks, and it'll correct your pronunciation. Shozen nan chi nyo to to shinge nyo rai jotai chi go. Bugo dai. Okay, that's a really slow gongo, and you'll learn really quickly to speed up from there. What I'm going to do for you is I'm going to perform maybe about 10 minutes of daimoku, and then I'm going to go into this at a slow pace, but not that slow. I'll use the bell and other things so you can get a feel for what it sounds like. And I want to provide that to you just so, and this is going to be a challenge for me after 30 years, to be sure that I'm pronouncing everything correctly. So I'll rely on your compassion for that. Anyway, this is already 40 minutes of video, so that's why we do this. That's a little verb on how we do. Oh, by the way, if you want, I have on threefoldlotus.com a PDF version that you can download of the Gangyo book, the liturgy. If you want one in print, please go to the Threefold Lotus Kwun Lulu store. That's at www.lulu.com/Kwun, Kwoon. I have all kinds of books there, not all by me, but a lot of resources. The Gangyo book, I don't remember the cost, it might be like $12 or whatever. You can download the PDF from there as well, if you want just the electronic version for your electronic device. They will charge, I think, 98 cents for the electronic copy, only because that's what they want for hosting it and making it downloadable. Like I said, you can get it for free from my website, the threefoldlotus.com website. But if you're also looking for other materials to download, the Gangyo book, maybe the liturgy, maybe some other books that I have there about Buddhism, how to practice, so on, it's available there. So you can also get a Gohonzon online from my Cafe Press website, which is cafepress.com/Gohonzon. Or slash Kwon, they both have. I have two, a couple of stores there. So get yourself a Gohonzon, make yourself a quick altar area, start practicing. I'm going to put a video online so that you can listen or practice with me, just to get the rhythm. If you're alone, I want to support you if you're alone because I want you to study diligently and I want you to have good partnership, good support in your practice. Okay? Love all of you. Thank you so much for listening. I'm gonna let you go with that, and then I'm gonna get ready to set up and go out to the school, Threefold Lotus Kwun altar, and we do this thing. All right, thank you once again. Namu myoho renge kyo, namu myoho renge kyo, namu myoho renge kyo. Have a great day. And now I need to find the stop button. It's my favorite part.